Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Does vitamin C fight cancer? Is vitamin E good for heart disease? Some studies have said yes, but slowly and steadily we're seeing more and more science come in that debunks the hefty promises of vitamin supplements. Still, millions of consumers continue to expect the unlikely from their vitamins. Add to that the trend of mega dosing with new claims of added health benefits from larger doses, and you'd be forgiven for throwing up your hands about which pills to pay for and which to avoid. So joining us now to break down some of the science and psychology of the vitamin industry is Tara Parker Pope. She covers this in her Well column and her blog in today's New York Times. Welcome, Tara.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, first things first. Will taking vitamin C really help me get over a cold faster? And how about all this mega dosing I'm doing with echinacea?
Echinacea is a whole different category. That's a different type of dietary supplement. You know, the vitamin C data is interesting. There was a big review of all the vitamin C studies because a lot of people believe it does help fight colds. Where they really found a benefit was in people who engage in extreme sports like soldiers and mountain climbers and marathon runners, and people who were in extreme conditions did get a benefit. But for the average person, they're not seeing benefit. There may be some marginal effect on the duration of your cold. If you start taking it during your cold, there's no effect for preventing colds. But the effect that it may have is so negligible not to even be noticed. So vitamin C doesn't really, you know, meet that promise. Now, a diet rich in vitamin C, you know, eating lots of fruits and vegetables, that clearly is good for you.
Well, I can assure you I'm not in extreme condition, but maybe I'll start marathoning to avoid that next cold. Let's talk about the latest study. What precisely were the researchers looking for? And I guess more to the point, what have they found?
Well, there's several recent studies. There was a study that came out just last week looking at multivitamin use among older women. And some earlier data had suggested that people who use multivitamins might have some protection against heart disease and cancer. This was a study of 161,000 older women. It was an observational study, so if there was a bias in the study, it should have shown a benefit because the people who take vitamins tend to be healthier anyway. It didn't show up in the study at all. There was just no benefit of multivitamin use, which was a bit of a surprise to the medical community. You know, other studies recently looked at vitamin E and C in this physician's health study. Again, no benefit, just no change if you compare people who were taking vitamin E and C supplements versus people in the placebo group. Same thing with a big prostate cancer study that was incredibly disappointing because some earlier data had suggested great potential for vitamin E and selenium in helping prevent prostate cancer. And this study was incredibly disappointing in the cancer community because they looked for a long time and there was just no effect.
Well, one of the things I found so insightful in your piece today was the focus on some of the inherent problems in any science behind vitamin studies. And I think some of the confusion comes from the fact that many of these things, let's take vitamin E or vitamin C, these are essential nutrients, right?
Exactly. And the problem is that we're really holding vitamins to a drug industry standard. To study a drug, you give one group of people the active drug and you give another group a placebo and you see if there's a difference. The problem with vitamins is that you're never going to have a placebo group. People are always going to be getting vitamin E, for instance, from their diet. So you're comparing them to people who are taking large doses of a supplement, but what you really can't control is how much vitamin E is really going into your placebo group. It may be that in that group of people, maybe they start eating healthier during the study. Maybe they're ingesting higher levels of vitamin E, and so you're not seeing the benefit. So it's one of these things where the scientific community is stepping back and saying, now, is this the right way to study? Maybe the mistake we're making is in holding out hope for the perfect randomized clinical trial showing a benefit, because maybe we're not going to ever see that.
But some of the studies do seem to be a bit more conclusive. There's that calcium and one kind of cancer. There was a recurrence study.
Well, it was a small benefit among people at risk for colon cancer, and they found that people who took calcium had lower rates of these precancerous polyps. You know, the Women's Health Initiative study came back negative for calcium and bone health, which was very surprising. But when you looked at a subgroup analysis in that study, you saw that older women who really did take their vitamin, who took their calcium supplements, had a tremendous benefit in that study. And that's another problem in vitamin studies. You know, to really see the effect, you've got to have high compliance. But, you know, a lot of people forget to take their pills. And so we're not necessarily, we're seeing how people might behave in the real world, but we're not necessarily measuring what happens when you take calcium every day for 6 years, because a lot of these people in these studies aren't taking the calcium every day for 6 years.
This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and I'm speaking with Tara Parker Pope of the New York Times. Let's talk about the vitamin industry. I'll confess, Tara, that in a previous life I was a consumer reporter, and I learned a whole lot about the industry. But I think listeners, might be surprised to know how big it is. So give us a little education, because that really affects the way in which the industry responds to this trend in science.
Well, I do think people have a perception that this is a sort of natural, holistic kind of industry. This is a $23 billion industry for dietary supplements. Now, that's not as big as the pharmaceutical industry, but a lot of pharmaceutical companies make and sell dietary supplements. I mean, there is big business behind this, and I think there's a lot of vested interest in trying to, you know, find a way to prove that these supplements work. And that's what's really been disappointing, is that you had a lot of high expectations, particularly in the cancer and the prevention community, in the vitamin community, and even all that goodwill has not resulted in positive studies. So it is big business, and by some estimates, 7 out of 10 households use vitamins. About half of adult consumers take some form of dietary supplement. You know, a lot of children, a lot of women are big users of dietary supplements. The irony here is that the people who tend to take vitamins tend to be pretty healthy anyway. They tend to be people who are active in the medical system, who get preventive checkups, who eat well, who exercise. Those are the users of vitamins. So when you look at observational studies of people who use vitamins, you get this healthy user effect. Healthy
yeah.
people take vitamins.
And it makes sense, of course, but as you say, it's also ironic, a $23 billion a year industry. It's quite amazing. Let's mention David Rockwell, who is in Dixon, I believe, Montana. I'm looking at my control room. Well, here's what he has to say. He asks on our website, "My doctor prescribed niacin to reduce cholesterol." Now, let me ask you about this, Tara. Is niacin in the category of vitamins that we're talking about? And do we know anything about studies about the effect of niacin and cholesterol?
Yeah, I would put niacin in a different category, because if you it really needs to be something you take in a discussion with your doctor. It is an effective treatment for people with heart problems, cholesterol. It can have a lot of side effects. I think that's not the typical supplement we're talking about. It can be an alternative to, you know, statins, to cholesterol-lowering drugs, which also have side effects. So that's what people need to kind of weigh here. You know, what am I getting out of this supplement? It is a pill. It's not an inert substance. Obviously, if we thought it was, we wouldn't be taking it. They do have an effect. But, you know, I think that's a little bit of a different situation than the people who are taking high doses of E and C and A and D and all these, you know, and fish oil and all these different things, because they believe they're going to get some boost to their immune system. They're going to prevent cancer and heart disease.
I'm
and that's
smiling.
The focus.
I'm smiling because I know some of those people, and I think we all do, and I would like to ask them to call in. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, speaking with Tara Parker Pope. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 212-433-WNYC and tell us what you expect from your vitamins. Do they work for you? How do you know? And if you'd like to ask Tara something, you can do that as well, 212-433-9692. Or you can leave a comment at the website, WNYC.org. We thank David Rockwell for his. I am seeing a bunch, Tara, about vitamin C. People really do swear by it, insisting that they hardly ever get colds. I'm a believer. Cold sores go away, the duration of colds. How do we explain this anecdotal allegiance to vitamin C if the studies don't back it up? And why don't consumers pay attention to the studies?
You know, why they don't pay attention to the evidence, I think consumers are very skeptical, and they've been whipsawed by a lot of conflicting health information. And I understand the skepticism. I think they're also very skeptical of the medical complex as a whole. They feel like people have an agenda to sell them drugs. I get that a lot. People think I might have an agenda, that because I am skeptical and I think some of this vitamin data is very credible, they say, well, you must want me to take a drug. No, I don't want you to take a drug either. I want you to eat right and exercise and take a more whole holistic view of your health in general. And if you do that, you can hopefully avoid a lot of drug treatments as well. But, you know, people do have these anecdotal reports about vitamin C. They swear by it. You know, the placebo effect is powerful, but I'm not even sure that's what we're talking about here. I think the type of person who is motivated to megadose with vitamin C the moment they feel a cold sore, the moment they feel like they're getting sick, that person is living a healthier lifestyle anyway. They probably have a stronger immune system, so they probably do get better faster or don't get sick as often, but I'm not sure you can attribute that to the vitamin C. I think that that's why we do these controlled clinical trials, to find out, are we seeing a placebo effect? Are we seeing a healthy user effect? And study after study after study is not finding a benefit. So, you know, but people believe what they want to believe.
Is there any harm, though, in taking vitamins that you don't need, or taking the wrong mix or too many?
Well, I think a lot of people for a long time thought, oh, what's the hurt? You know, it's vitamins. It's in our food. But there's something different when you isolate these compounds. Food is complex, and they interact. You know, all these nutrients interact together in our foods. And what's so troubling is that in recent years, they've started doing these major analyses, and they're finding that people who, in these studies, the vitamin users, the high antioxidant users, have actually been doing worse. They're having higher rates of heart failure in a vitamin E study, for instance, that was intended to help their heart. A beta-carotene study that they thought would help people who were former smokers, thought they would reduce their risk of developing lung cancer. They had a higher risk, a much higher risk of lung cancer. You know, we've had a lot of evidence that people, you know, vitamin A, too much vitamin A. I think it was a nurse's health study. Women had a higher risk for bone fracture. So there definitely is harm associated with taking large doses. And what is really troubling about vitamin C is the research we've seen where if you look at tumors in a test tube, they love vitamin C. You know, we assume that a healthy body likes vitamin C, but you know what? An unhealthy cells, tumor cells, like vitamin C even more. They take it up faster. They grab it faster than the healthy cells.
And tumors, you're terrifying me.
Well, I don't want to terrify you. I don't think people who are taking vitamin C, you know, who are taking multivitamins, I don't think they're taking them in the doses that can cause harm. I guess the question is this you? You know, you're an active, healthy, aware consumer, and is this where you should be putting your energy and your resources? I mean, you may ultimately decide that's where to go. But, you know,
at least be educated about it. Well, as you can imagine, Tara, the phones are lighting up. And here's one from Brooklyn, I believe also from Atara. Thank you for joining us on WNYC. Hello, are you there?
Oh, hi.
Tara, why don't you go ahead? Tara, you're on with Tara.
That's
and
right.
I understand you have a question about multivitamins.
Just a simple one. I just started taking one 2 weeks ago from my doctor told me to because I'm 36, but I do fall in the category of eating healthy and working out and stuff like that. But I'm just wondering, is this going to help me or make me or break me? Am I wasting my money?
It's not going to hurt you, and I think it's to look at the data. I mean, I'm curious why a doctor would prescribe this. I mean, a lot of women of childbearing age are at risk for anemia, so maybe your multivitamin has iron in it, and, you know, 15% of women in their childbearing years have anemia. So that's a risk out there that's real for many women. I don't know if you've had children or you're planning to have children, but folic acid, if that's in your multivitamin, it's always good to be taking that if you might get pregnant or plan to have a baby in the future. So there might be a reason. I don't know what's in your multivitamin or what the doctor prescribed. I don't think there's any worry about it. I don't think there's harm. I don't know that, assuming that none of those are issues your doctor is concerned about.
And I think we may have lost Tara. But as you can hear, the most important thing would be to consult with your doctor and to eat well. Tara, are you still with us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. I thought we lost you there for a moment. You know, it does seem very clear that to consult with a doctor, no matter what you're going to take, vitamins or prescription medication, is clearly important. But we are getting a lot of calls and emails from people who are vegetarians, and they may or may not discuss that with a doctor, assuming they see a doctor. What should they be taking? We have a bunch of posts and phone calls from people wondering if they should take vitamins at all, and if so, what kind?
Well, I can't make that decision for them at all, but, you know, vegetarians are obviously getting a lot of fruits and vegetables in their diet. They may be missing other things, especially if they're vegan. I was reading on the Mayo Clinic website that a lot of vegetarians, they suggest a vitamin B supplement, but again, that's not something you should take in large doses. I do think that if you're concerned about, am I getting adequate nutrients? nutrition, a multivitamin is a really safe way to go. It's a controlled dose. It's going to give you not too much, not too little. And I think if that's your worry, that's very safe. I think where the harm and the risk comes in is when you start taking large doses, particularly, can I say, for people who are cancer patients or who've had cancer. The cancer community is very worried because vitamins interfere with chemotherapy treatments. They make your chemotherapy less effective. And that's those are the people who really need to be talking to your oncologist, to your doctor about vitamin therapy, because you have, I think, the most to lose from taking the wrong thing.
Let's take one more call. Robert from Millburn, New Jersey. You have a different take, right, Robert?
Actually, it's Millburn.
Yes.
And I used to, when I was younger, perhaps through my 20s, get frequent cold sores, fever blisters. And I read, I can't remember the name of the person who did this vitamin C study many, many years ago. So I started taking vitamin C, and over the years reduced that amount dramatically so that I take, I think now I'm taking something like 125 milligrams a day. But if I feel the onset of a fever blister, I increase that to about 500 a day, and I have not had a fever blister in decades.
Well, Tara, there's one of those anecdotal stories, and Robert in Millburn, of course, New Jersey, I'm sorry if I mispronounced it, seems to have had for many years a beneficial effect from vitamin C.
Well, it seems that way, but I would say two things. You know, I don't know the data on vitamin C and cold sores, so I'm not familiar with that data. It's not something I've looked at. I do know that cold sores tend to diminish over time. You tend to get less frequent appearances of cold sores. You know, it's the herpes virus, and it can be latent for a long period of time. So, again, the question is, are we really seeing effect of vitamin C? Are we seeing an effect where the regular vitamin C supplementation is lowering stress levels, and he feels more confident that, you know, he's less worried about the cold sore? I mean, there's all kinds of things that can be factored into it, but again, I haven't looked at the data. There may very well be an effect. I think we're hearing from a fair number of these people. So I think, there are studies that have shown benefit. There's a major eye study called the Age-Related Eye Disease Study that did find a benefit with high antioxidant supplements and zinc, but for a very narrow, specific group of people who had advanced, who were at high risk for advanced macular degeneration, which meant they already had it in one eye. It didn't prevent macular degeneration for people who didn't have it, or if they had moderate level, but they had this very narrow benefit. So there is some evidence that sometimes it can help, but it's, you know, figuring out when it does and when it doesn't. And, you know, people with macular degeneration, smokers are at higher risk for macular degeneration. Well, smokers are also at higher risk from taking beta-carotene. Beta-carotene is a treatment, you know, is one of these preventions for macular degeneration. I don't know how you decide as a consumer what risk am I willing to take, lung cancer or eye health. It's incredibly difficult.
Well, as you suggest, step one would be to inform yourself and then, of course, to consult with a physician and to understand that vitamins are not magic bullets, which is the message I've gotten from you today. And I guess really step one is to read Tara Parker Pope's Well column in today's New York Times. Thank you so much for being with us, Tara. It's been enlightening.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Coming up, backpacks on birds, migration patterns, and how innovative scientists made a fascinating breakthrough.